TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL.
I always enjoy bringing you the latest. This is The Scoop.
It's The Scoop with Darren Dookie Wolfson from 5 Eyewitness News.
And away we go on this late Thursday afternoon, the 24th of September. The year is 2020. This is Scoop Podcast Episode 315. Let me get to a couple quick notes, then we'll get to some conversations. I want to get to my son's baseball practice, so a little under the gun, but I think I'll bring you enough information for you to dive into and dissect and enjoy. Let me start with something that came up on the Mackey and Judd show earlier today. I read a text, or I paraphrased a text I got from an NBA agent. This agent represents a high-profile draft prospect. So I was curious. I reached out to this individual, just curious if the Wolves have interviewed his client. The answer is no, at least to date. He then, unsolicited to me, said he ran into somebody, a player that knows Karl Anthony Towns incredibly well, ran into him the other day, and said the idea was that Karl Anthony Towns wants out. Now, he doesn't want out right now. Let me lay that out as succinctly as possible. Nothing is even close to being reality when it comes to Karl Anthony Towns asking the Wolves to move him. It's a topic we've talked about months. I think the first time it was broached was when Anthony Davis got his way and he got out of New Orleans, ended up with the LA Lakers. The clock is ticking on Karl Anthony Towns. He is now into that massive extension. So the clock is ticking. I think at some point he wants to win and wants to win at a high level. I know that there's all sorts of debate about his competitiveness, you know, the defense. Does he really want to win? Is he really willing to invest in all assets of ensuring that his team has the best chance to compete at a very high level? I get all that, but I do sense that he does want to win, and he wants to win as the alpha dog. The Wolves, to their credit, have laid out the red carpet. They have done so much for Karl Anthony Towns. They are catering to his every want and need. Heck, if you asked Jimmy Butler, Jimmy would say, why? You know, treat him the way you treat everybody else. Why are you catering to his every want and need? But that's another topic. But the Wolves, right or wrong, have done just about everything imaginable to empower Cat to do what he wants, that he has a lot of say in the way a lot of things are run at Mayo Clinic Square. I just think the next year is big. I guess the headline of this 3-minute diatribe would be that the next year is big, that the draft is big with picks 117 and 33. They have the mid-level exception. What trade possibilities end up presenting themselves? You know, can they maybe eventually trade for a superstar, a Bradley Beal, a Ben Simmons? You know, I don't know if those teams, Philadelphia and Washington, are moving their stars right now, but would they move them maybe at the trade deadline next year? So, you know, then you look at that number one pick, maybe you stay at number one, take a guy, but eventually the idea is to move that guy. But I think the idea would be you need to hit on that guy so that guy can be the feature player of a big-time package to bring back a third superstar. So the clock is ticking. The Wolves need to make moves. They need to do a lot to elevate to the upper half of the Western Conference, the upper, you know, top whatever, 5, 6, 7, certainly the top 8, to at least make the playoffs again. Oh, by the way, Karl Anthony Towns' one appearance in the playoffs didn't go so well, so he wants to redeem himself in that regard. So I just think it's worth monitoring his situation. This agent has nothing to gain, I promise. There is nothing for this agent to gain telling me that information. I can tell you that that chatter has been out there for a while. Like, that's not the first time I've heard something along those lines. It might be the first time that I've brought it up, because it hit me that, hey, maybe I should bring it up. It is a talker. That's what we do here on the podcast, on the radio. You know, we throw out different talking points and we debate whether there's legitimacy or not. I'm just telling you, at this point, there's nothing legitimate about it. But the chatter is out there to suggest that people in the league are not wondering about Karl Anthony Towns' future. Does he want to be here long term? That chatter is absolutely positively out there. Make no mistake about that. So I guess what I'm getting at is, let's see what takes place over the next year. This would be an interesting conversation to circle back to 1 year from now, late September 2021. What situation are the Wolves in? What situation is Karl Anthony Towns in? In terms of Cat doing anything in the bubble, I'm not quite sure he's going to be very active you know, when it comes to scrimmages ramp up on Monday. Same with Malik Beasley, restricted free agent. There's no reason for him to put his body on the line. But the Wolves, the public relations staff, did send out a list of guys that are in the bubble. And both those guys were on the list. Omari Spellman, not on the list. He has a newborn. He's working out on his own. It's an unwritten but mutual understanding that the Wolves are going to work to move Spellman before the start of next season. So he chose to not come to the bubble. And Juancho Hernan Gomez committed to filming this Adam Sandler movie out in Philadelphia. He committed to that before knowing the dates of this mini camp. So he's out there, but he was in town most of the summer. He worked out with Jake Lehman, with local trainer Reed Osi. Like, Hernan Gomez was here a bunch of the summer working out, also at Mayo Clinic Square. The idea is for Hernan Gomez to be here to re-sign this summer, even though he is a restricted free agent. So I would not worry about Hernan Gomez not being here. But even if he was here, much like Beasley as a restricted free agent, there is no reason to put your body on the line during this voluntary mini camp. The Wolves continue to do a bunch of draft interviews in no particular order. Some draft prospects they've interviewed in recent weeks that I have not mentioned previously: Alabama point guard Kira Lewis Jr., Paul Reed of DePaul, Jalen Smith of Maryland, Trey Jones, Apple Valley's Trey Jones, interviewed on Monday. Former Gopher Daniel Oturu interviewed on Tuesday. Oturu also had a draft interview Thursday today with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Some draft prospects are waiting, like Sadiq Bey, somebody I like at pick 17, if the Wolves end up staying at pick 17, of Villanova. He has not started to do his draft interviews. I like Nico Mannion, especially if he gets to 33, the Arizona point guard. The Wolves have not connected with him yet. There's a few other guys. RJ Hampton is another that's an intriguing name at pick 17. He, too, has not interviewed at least yet with the Wolves. Anthony Edwards has not interviewed yet with the Wolves. Some of the real top guys have not interviewed yet with the Wolves. But the Wolves are going to get, even if it's virtually, FaceTime with the top draft guys. They are in a position of power. Having pick one is a big deal. If the Wolves were at pick five, for example, do I think that they would get FaceTime with LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards? No, I don't. I just don't see that that would be a situation that would take place. But at pick one, there is legitimacy in the idea of guys want to be pick one. Anthony Edwards would love to be pick one. I'm told LaMelo Ball would love to be pick one. So those guys are going to talk to the Wolves. It's a matter of when, not if, but those interviews still need to be firmly scheduled. Briefly on the Twins, Nelson Cruz on Sunday Night Baseball mentioned his hamstring bugging him. The Twins have said it's his knee. I'm told if last night, Wednesday night, was a playoff game, then Nelson Cruz would have been in the lineup. But to suggest that he's 100% would be asinine. I fully expect him in the lineup at least once, if not multiple times, this weekend, the series against the Reds, to get some tune-up at-bats in before next Tuesday. So the plan next Tuesday is for Nelson Cruz to be batting, what, probably third as the DH. So yeah, alarming that he's missed four consecutive days, that they had the off day Monday, then wasn't in the lineup Tuesday, not in the lineup Wednesday, but I'm told he should be fine. Unless there is some sort of setback, he should be back at some point this weekend, then in the lineup for game one of the best of three. We are still awaiting the opponent, but the Twins in all likelihood will be at Target Field next Tuesday for game one of a best of three opening round series. Twins instructionals will get rocking and rolling this weekend in Fort Myers. A number of guys, including a guy that will be on this podcast in a bit, Aaron Sabato and Matt Wallner, the pride of Forest Lake. Some of the Twins' top prospects are down there. Now Alex Kirilloff is here in town. He's part of the 40-player pool. Doesn't mean he'll be on the Twins' playoff roster, but they kept him in town just in case. So Kirilloff is not back in Fort Myers, but other top prospects are. They underwent COVID testing this week, and they will be on the field starting this weekend. I'll save some other notes for a different podcast because I want to get these conversations going so I can get to my son's baseball practice. Let me start with Sachin Gupta, vice president with the Wolves, had a chance. He was in the mix for the Sacramento Kings. I don't know what they termed it. Is it president of operations? But running the Kings front office. He interviewed with the Kings. He was right there until the end. He's only, what, 38 years old. He's going to get a chance eventually to run his own front office. So the Wolves are fortunate to be able to keep him, that he doesn't get the Kings job. He is heavily, heavily invested in Wolves trade possibilities, the draft, and everything that Gersan Rosas is doing leading the Wolves front office. By the way, David Vanterpool likely is not advancing to the second round of Pacers interviews. I'm told his initial Pacers interview went well. I think Vanterpool, like Gupta, Vanterpool, it's when, not if, he'll be an NBA head coach. I just don't know if it'll be this particular offseason. It's when, not if, that Sachin Gupta will get a chance to run an NBA front office. He created the ESPN trade machine. I'm telling you, he is beloved over there at Mayo Clinic Square. Like, everybody loves him. He came from the Pistons organization. He's worked also in Philadelphia and Houston, and he's not even 40 years old. So he is a big-time asset for the Wolves. I had a chance to chat with Sachin the other day. Here's my conversation this week with Sachin Gupta.
Okay. Sachin, let's go back to about 12, 13, 14 months ago. You made the decision to leave Detroit, come here. In hindsight, as you look back at that decision, about the best decision, everything you've experienced the last year plus, about the best decision you could have made?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited to be here. And I knew Gerson for a long time. I've worked with him in the past. I've worked closely with him hand in hand. And so I knew what I was walking into there, just the way he thinks about the game, his modern approach to roster building and to collaboration. You know, Gerson comes from the scouting side. I came from the analytics side. But we've always collaborated so well together. And, so I knew what I was walking into there. What I didn't know was on the other hand, the rest of the crew that we have here with Coach Saunders, and, again, the alignment and collaboration is unlike anything I've seen. The partnership that he and Gerson have, and the relationship that he and I have built over the past year plus has been really special to me, and makes me really excited about.
I mean, you've seen a lot, Sachin. I mean, you know, in Houston, you know, it's where you know Gerson from, in Philly, in Detroit. So, I mean, you've been around a lot. But the collaboration you guys have here, I mean, it's unlike anything you've experienced in your three previous stops.
Absolutely, and all those spots have been amazing. I've loved my time there. I've loved everyone who I've worked with. But there is something different here. There's the alignment in the culture, which isn't random. It's you know, it's something that's important to Gerson and to Ryan, and you can really feel it. And it is very different. I think often you find that there are sort of these invisible lines that shouldn't be crossed, but those don't exist here. And for me, you know, I walk into film room with coaches and players, and no one bats an eye. It's normal. And, you know, not just for me, anyone in our front office, it's a very open environment, whether it's us being at practice, being in film, or coaches being part of our draft process, or free agent and trade discussions. We're just one group that's aligned towards a common goal.
How do you pick your spots, when to raise your hand and voice an opinion, especially if you're in the film room? Like, is Ryan open-minded to something like that? Is Coach Vanterpool, is Pablo, are those guys open-minded if you have a suggestion in that regard?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily sort of jump in that exact environment, but for sure, those guys are so open-minded, and, you know, but those would probably be conversations I would have behind the scenes, you know, one-on-one with Ryan or with Pablo or with Coach Vanterpool. But for sure, there's such an open-mindedness, and we have someone on our analytics staff who's essentially part of the coaching staff, and you know, the influence that he's able to have and the voice that he's able to have is really pretty incredible. And that's not it's a credit to him, but it's more so a credit to Ryan and the coaching staff for how they welcome him and treat him and honestly listen to the input that he has and incorporate it into their own decision making and practice plans and strategies and schemes. It's pretty special.
All right. So before you joined an NBA franchise, I mean, we laid out where you've been in terms of your NBA stops, but you were at ESPN, and prior to that, so you graduated from MIT. So you went from MIT, graduated from MIT, and started to work for ESPN immediately?
Yeah, that's right. So I studied computer science at MIT, and at that time wanted to find a way to combine my passion with sports with what I was studying. And I was really fortunate. I got an internship at ESPN.com while I was an undergrad, and ended up working there full time as a software engineer. And the way it works there, we sort of divided up the sports in our group, and I was fortunate to be the basketball guy. And so I worked closely with the NBA editors, with Chris Ramsey, who's the son of Dr. Jack. He was heading up the NBA editorial at that time. We built a great relationship, and among a few different things, one project we worked on was the NBA trade machine. He came to me with the idea, and we sort of ran with it together, and didn't realize what it would become. But it was great fun, and I didn't realize at the time that that would sort of end up becoming a big part of my job years later. Just having learned, I had to learn the rules of the CBA to build that, and that's very central to what I do now, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody sort of knows you. Anybody that follows basketball knows you from the trade machine. I almost wonder if it's almost just, lack of a better word, maybe nauseating, that there's so much more to you and your background, yet a lot of people just pigeonhole you, Sachin, to the guy that created the trade machine.
Yeah, there are worse things. So I get that. But no, it's been, you know, that was sort of my way to get in. And working, you know, as you said, I've been at several teams over the years, and working with great people like Gerson, and learning from all these different areas, learning scouting, learning from the coaching perspective, from the performance department and medical. Over all these years, I've been able to learn a lot from all those different places, and help our groups come to the best decisions that we can.
So if you don't go the MBA route, like was basketball always your passion? Like at ESPN.com, could you have gone the Major League Baseball route, or you name the professional sport, that if you don't go the NBA route, who knows if we're talking to you right now as one of the brain wizards of the Wolves front office?
I love all sports, but basketball was always my passion, and I'm really fortunate that it worked out here. At that time, baseball was sort of the early leader in the analytics movement. It easily could have gone that way, but I was fortunate that the movement started in basketball right around that time, and I was early to catch on that early wave and be in this position now.
Am I correct in terms of your guys' analytics department? It's going through some change right now, and you guys brought in somebody from 24/7?
So we brought in, yes, and that's less so the analytics department. That's more the scouting department.
Okay.
Josh Gershon, we brought in. We think he'll be a tremendous help to our scouting group. He's a grassroots expert, and we're excited for how he can help us, with our upcoming decisions in this draft, and also very much for future drafts also.
On Gershon, I saw that Anthony Edwards is his guy. So is it a done deal? You bring him aboard. Anthony Edwards is going to be the number one pick.
We've got a lot of work ahead of us.
I mean, on that, I mean, where are things at in terms of, draft prep? I mean, heck, you've had a really long time, and now you recently found out, right, that the draft goes from what, October 16th to November 18th. So that gives you yet another month to do some deep diving.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been good for us. We're relatively new. We're a year into year two of our regime now, and with new changes like the addition of Josh, and we're still getting our processes in place and creating new processes, and so I think the additional time is great for us, and in whatever way we're maybe lacking information that we would have normally in a normal draft process, I think we're making up for that with the additional time and the additional study and looking at things inside and out every which way that we can. And you know, trying to get access to more information and more data sets to make the best decision that we can.
Are there still some kids that you want to interview? I mean, I know you've interviewed a lot of kids so far, but are there still some guys, especially some of the upper echelon guys, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you guys have interviewed Anthony Edwards yet. So there's still some guys that you do want to sit down with and do one of these Zoom chats with.
You absolutely. Yeah. We're still working through the process. There's still quite a bit of work to be done. I'm happy with what we've been able to accomplish thus far. I think we're right on track and excited for what we can do. And it's not just limited to the draft also. I mean, there's so many possibilities for us with trade and trade backs and trade outs. And of course free agency as well. So there's a lot on our plate, and this additional time will be valuable for us. In a normal year, it's so rushed with the free agency coming just days after the draft, which comes just days after the season. So we're going to take advantage of this time for sure.
On the trading back or trading out options, I mean, how much of it is just internal dialogue right now compared to you guys are grinding, whether it's sending text messages to other league executives or hopping on the phone, you know, starting that external trade dialogue?
I think at this point it's still largely internal, but I'm sure things will start heating up here. As you said, the draft getting pushed back again, I think with a lack of clarity, I think things still aren't in 100% high gear yet, but I'm sure they will be soon.
Sachin, is there a particular strength or two of this draft? Like I had a Western Conference executive tell me that he feels like there's not a lot of difference between maybe picks 15 and 40, which isn't a bad thing for you guys picking at 17 and 33, that maybe there's not that upper echelon. There's not a Zion Williamson or maybe even a Ja Morant or clearly not a LeBron or a Karl Anthony Towns type at the very top, but that there's depth in the middle of this draft. Would you agree with that assessment, or is there another particular strength or two that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I think every draft is it's hard to predict. If it was easy, then MVPs wouldn't be picked at 15. I think it's hard to predict, and we're going to make the best decision that we can with the information that we have. I think one positive is sort of having picks, obviously at one and then, in the middle of the first at 17 and then early in the second at 33 really gives us access to the whole range of prospects there. I think oftentimes, if you're out of the range of some prospects, you may not get access to some information. And so I think we're in a pretty good position sort of covering the whole gamut there.
Is one logical possibility trying to acquire a pick in next year's draft with your pick, what is it, only top three protected from the D'Angelo Russell trade? So, I mean, there's a relatively good chance that you don't have a first round pick in the 2021 draft. Is that a logical goal that if you end up making some sort of transaction that at least some of the return is maybe a first round pick next year?
It's a factor. We'll be looking at all possibilities. It's all about what's going to make us better, not just to tomorrow, but for the next, for years to come, for the next 3 or 5 years. And Kurs always says, these draft decisions aren't about tomorrow. It's a 3 to 4 year decision. And so, I don't think we'll be overly focused on, that solely, but, sure, it's a factor, we'll be diligent and looking at all the options.
How far do you think, Sachin, that you guys are from that upper, that top eight of the Western Conference? I mean, the West is so deep; it's not going to slow down when whenever next season starts. It sounds like maybe January at the earliest at this point. I saw that Commissioner Silver was on CNN earlier today with Bob Costas. He mentioned it sounds like January at the earliest. But whenever next season starts, the West is still going to be incredibly deep. I mean, do you feel like with a move or two, with the core of D'Angelo, you know, presumably you find a way to bring Malik Beasley back, Karl Anthony Towns, and everybody else that slots in with a move or two, that you guys can enter that top eight?
Yeah, it's the West it's tough. It's tough. There's so many quality teams in the West, and we'll have our work cut out for us. But yeah, we feel good about the young group that we have, and it's again with all of our decisions, we come in with a long-term view, and it's not just about maximizing what we can be next year. It's about maximizing what we can be over the next several years, and with Carl and D'Angelo, we've got an exciting young core, and we want to continue to take steps. You know, it's not about making a big jump next year and then falling back the year after. We want to continue making steps to build towards the high ceiling that we can have into the future.
How much are you looking forward to? I saw Monday is the first day that you guys will technically scrimmage to see D'Angelo and Carl play some 5-on-5.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's another factor too in all of this. You know, we changed over the roster at the trade deadline, and you know, we didn't have much opportunity to see what it all looks like together. And so, you know, having this additional time to evaluate and to build chemistry is really important for us as we enter the draft and free agency period.
On trade possibilities, is there any such thing as a dumb trade proposal? Like, or is the theory that you throw something out and if the other team says no, hey, that's the worst that can happen. But like literally there's nothing that's ridiculous to throw out there.
I think that's fair. But you know, this is a repeated game. You know, this league is very relationship based, and you know, you don't want to you know, make enemies or you know, to make offers that might cause someone to not want to call you back again. So you know, I think it's important to sort of you know, to sort of have respect for your counterparts and be reasonable. But no, in general, you know, there are lots of folks around the league that you have relationships with where you can't throw things against the wall. And, you know, it's that's often the way you get to actual deals, is when there's that comfort and that trust where you can sort of just come up with ideas freely.
How much of the next few weeks, the bubble, I mean, you're talking to us now from your hotel room in downtown Minneapolis, how much of the next few weeks is as much about team chemistry and team bonding as it is actually getting work in on the court? Because, like, a lot of these guys are still getting to know each other in so many different ways. So, like, are you guys doing some team dinners? I mean, you guys are doing the daily COVID testing, right? So everybody, as long as you guys are together, you know that you guys are all, you know, coronavirus free. So are you guys doing some team dinners and some other bonding activities?
Yeah, you're 100% spot on. It's just as important as the on-court work is building that chemistry and the camaraderie and in that culture with a group of players and staff that unfortunately, you know, haven't had as much time together as we'd like. And yeah, that's certainly a focus for us during this period, for sure.
Anything jumped out, and I'll let you go after a few more. Anything jump out from the workouts with guys being in Mayo Clinic Square the last 10 full months? Like, I saw some Instagram video where it looks like Jarrett Culver has altered his shot, which I think was necessary, but it looks like his shot mechanics are different. Like, is that something that jumps out? Anything else that jumps out to you from guys being in the gym the last handful of months?
Yeah, for sure. That is a big one. That's something that he's been working on, and that our coach has been working with him on closely. But it's been great to have everyone back in Minnesota, and to, you know, I think to at some point, you know, the 1-0 workouts are less exciting. And so everyone's really jazzed up for these group workouts, but it's been great to have everyone back for these 1-0 workouts and working so diligently on their games and on development. And also being able to enjoy our wonderful Minnesota summers and spend time together and, you know, go for runs around the lake and just try to build that camaraderie. It's obviously been a tough situation, but I think we made the best of it.
Do the Lakers win the championship or would you take somebody else?
LeBron's looking pretty strong at this point, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be hard to bet against them, especially after AD makes the shot at the buzzer the other night. I just, you know, Denver's come back from 3-1 deficit, so them being down a couple games, you know, they're not in foreign territory, but I just don't know at this point how you would bet against the Lakers. Okay, I'll hit you with two more. So, Sachin, you didn't – oh, did I lose you there? I still have you.
Yep.
No problem. Yep, I still got you. So it was out there that you interviewed for the Sacramento job. Just how grateful are you that you had a chance to go through that interview process? I mean, you know, you've mentioned Gerson a few times. I mean, Gerson, right? I mean, Sachin, he went through a number of interviews before he landed this job, and he took that job in Dallas for a little bit. But he interviewed for a number of jobs. Like, I have to imagine going through the process was incredibly valuable for when he nailed his interview here. Like, I'm not quite sure. Between us, like, I don't know if I would have made him the betting favorite heading into the race last year. Like, I might have made Chauncey Billups or Calvin Booth the betting favorite. But Gerson nailed his interview. He knocked it out of the park. Like, after his interview, I was told it was a slam dunk. Like, it was a no-brainer. Like, this is our guy. It was a blowout after his interview. So, like, how grateful are you that you had a chance to go through the process?
Oh, absolutely. That's the right word. I'm grateful to have had the chance to go through the process, which was my first time, and it was a great learning experience and built lots of great new relationships through that process. And even more so, just how supportive Gerson was and Ryan was and the whole organization meant so much to me throughout that whole process. And it makes me so excited to be back here and to dive right back in and be here in the bubble with everyone and get to work. I'm grateful for that opportunity I'm happy to refocus on what we have here and doing something special here.
I saw a tweet from Dave Carmichael, who does a great job covering the Sacramento Kings. He's a Sacramento media personality. Yeah. That you found out his cell phone number, that you called him to thank him for his support. I don't know how vocal he was in supporting your candidacy and hoping that you got that Kings job, but he tweeted that you called him. Like, where does that niceness come from? Because just covering the league enough over the last handful of years, that's not the norm.
I appreciate that. I had a great experience through the whole process, and I was appreciative of it and just wanted to show that. And I think they made a great hire with Monty McNair, who is someone I've worked with and am close with. And, I just wanted the support that I received to be shared with him. It's like I said, I don't take anything negative at all from the whole process. It was just such a great experience for me, and just wanted to repay that forward.
Yeah, is there something to be said about, you know, just treat others as you want to be treated? And Dave was vocal supporting you. So, you know, I mean, the least you could have done is, you know, take 5 minutes, call him on the phone and thank him for that. But I'm just saying, Sachin, that doesn't sound normal. Like, you know, like, you know the league enough. Like, that just doesn't happen.
It wasn't calculated or anything. I just felt the need to do that, and I did it. It's not even treat others the way that you want to be treated. It's the way I have been treated. And I felt felt so much support from so many different places throughout the whole process. And, you know, that was the least I could do.
Sachin, thank you for doing this. I firmly believe that good things happen to good people. So if you want to be here for the next 10 or 20 years, 30 years, I have a feeling it'll work out. If you want to run your own show, I have no doubt in my mind that day will happen. It'll be a when, not if. Who knows if it's in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, but that it'll happen. So thank you for doing this.
I appreciate that, Darren. It means a lot.
Wolves VP Sachin Gupta. The Wolves are very, very lucky to have him. Stops in Philadelphia and in Houston and in Detroit, knowing Ed Stefanski in Detroit, others with the Pistons. You know, Dwayne Casey's been on the podcast. Sean Sweeney's in Detroit. Like, I've heard so many good things about Sachin. And then you talk to Wolves people, they will tell you he's got a heart of gold. He's got a mind that just, it never stops thinking. He throws out a lot of different trade possibilities. So he is a wonderful resource as this offseason continues for the Wolves, the longest offseason that the franchise likely will ever endure. He's one heck of an asset for that Wolves franchise. I asked him about Cat and scrimmages next week. Again, I guess I would be surprised at this point if Cat ends up doing anything in terms of, you know, running up and down, you know, hardcore 5-on-5. I will say that as of the taping of this podcast on Thursday, a few hours ago, there are no definitive plans for the Wolves to stream those scrimmages. Like, how cool would it be as a fan, as a media person, to be able to watch those scrimmages next week? Again, the first one on Monday. But right now, it was something that I was told they're still looking into. So I guess I wouldn't say, you know, never say never, you know, no chance. But at this point, there are no definitive plans to stream those scrimmages. All right, let me now transition to my conversation from earlier today with Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen, his wife Caitlin, the Thielen Foundation, making a large donation, over $75,000, to benefit many youth athletes here in the Twin Cities. They've given back so much over the last couple of years through the Thielen Foundation. So we talked Thielen Foundation, then we talked a little bit of football. Here's my conversation from earlier on Thursday with Adam Thielen of the Vikings.
All right, Adam, even during a pandemic, heck, multiple pandemics, your foundation, you, your wife, others have found a way to give back. Tell us about your most recent donation.
Yeah, just trying to, you know, continue to do our part and to try to give back to this community again that has done so much for us. Obviously, with everything going on, it makes it more difficult, but we feel that there's even more need now. So excited to be able to do that and still be able to do it safely and within, you know, the guidelines of what we can and can't do. So we were able to get a bunch of kids from North Minneapolis, football players, 12 to 14 year olds into Shields, and Shields did a great job of hosting us and giving those kids some gift cards to be able to go shop and get some things that they need to help them, you know, play and have fun. So it was a really, really cool experience to kind of hang out with them and just to go see them kind of shop around. We kind of had to be from afar, but it was still good.
On the fun part, Adam, I mean, I imagine a lot of those 12 to 14 year olds, if not all of them, are doing distant learning, or even if it's hybrid, they're only in school maybe 2 days a week. So being able to be on the field, social interaction, hanging out with their friends, albeit, yeah, in a safe way, in a safe environment, but that's incredibly important.
Yeah, I mean, just being able to talk with their coaches, these men who have been doing it for a long time and really just giving, donating their time to create those opportunities for these kids to just be able to get outside and play. And in this time, with everything going on more than ever, it's important to still have that social interaction, like you said, and to be able to just go play with your friends and get outside and be able to do the things that you really enjoy doing. So it was really fun to be able to talk with those coaches and just kind of hear what they're doing in their community. You know, they have their kids every Saturday morning do an hour of community service within their community in North Minneapolis. So they're doing some just really amazing things. And those are the type of people that we want to, you know, help support and, you know, kind of be there alongside of with my wife and I and our foundation.
We were there last year, you know, when times were normal at Brooklyn Center High School, when you helped out the athletes at Brooklyn Center, you found a way to help out another group of high school athletes with Robbinsdale Cooper?
Yeah. So, you know, we knew that when we started this at Brooklyn Center, we knew that we were really trying to, you know, have it be successful and do it right. So we could kind of implement that in other areas of that need that help and that support and those resources, things like that. So, again, just being able to partner with people that we feel are really committing their time and efforts to help youth and help them become the best people for this community they can be. And that was what Robbinsdale Cooper and those coaches really embody. So I'm excited to be able to help out there and to commit to really helping those youth in their sports have the resources and opportunities to make them excited about doing those after school activities and perform well in school so they can do those and have the resources to do that. So really excited about that.
The head coach at Cooper is a former Viking, Willie Howard. I saw some photos that you had a chance, masks and everything, but you had a chance to interact with Willie. Did his history with the Vikings come up? I mean, just an interesting connection there.
It did, yeah. And I didn't realize that, but what a great man. Again, just what he's able to do in that community to mentor these kids, to support them, to really just giving up his time and his efforts to make this, make that community a better place. So, those are the people that we want to partner with and to really support and help. Just a really great conversation with him and his coaches and really makes you more excited to give and to donate your time as well.
To get a $75,000 donation, to be able to spread it out to Cooper, to Northside Impact, to Urban Ventures. I mean, it takes a lot of people. I mean, it's not just you and your wife. How many other people deserve love for getting this off the ground?
Well, you know, first of all, Luke and Amy, in all they do for running our foundation, you know, when my wife and I are busy with the season and all that, you know, they're on the ground running. We kind of usually just give them a direction of where we want to, kind of how we want the foundation to go. And they kind of go out and do the groundwork. And then we get to kind of connect after that and find, you know, the perfect fits for us as our family and our foundation. And, you know, they just do a phenomenal job. We're so thankful for them. And then just all the people that have supported our foundation over the last few years. It's just, it's been amazing. The people that are just buying into really helping this community and really the community that needs it most. That's what we're excited about, you know, with underprivileged youth that just don't have those resources, opportunities with mental health that get overlooked a lot of that, especially in youth. So it's been great, and we're excited to connect with more people, whether to make a bigger impact or to find more places that are in need of our help and our foundation's help.
What sort of challenges are there right now, though, in terms of connecting with more people? Like, I think about the great event that we were at last year at Top Golf. Like, an event like that, clearly, right, in the coronavirus pandemic, we can't have an event like that. So what sorts of challenges exist?
Yeah, it's a little bit harder to get our message out of what we're trying to, you know, do in the community to raise funds for those, for those opportunities that we have to give back. And so it definitely creates challenges. But there's also another side of it where you got to be creative. And it also gives you time to really solidify these relationships and to find, you know, really good fits that really need our help. And so that's kind of what our goal is right now. And luckily, thank the Lord, we've been able to raise a lot the last few years that we have some funds to be able to divvy out. So yes, there's challenges and all that, but it's definitely been a blessing as far as being able to hone in and to be able to diversify some funds.
Adam, when did you realize that you had this incredible platform and you needed to use this incredible platform for others? It's just not about you, that there's so much more in life and so many more people need help. I mean, and I guess who instilled those sorts of beliefs in you going back many, many years? Maybe it's way back to the youth in Detroit. Like, but who helped instill those beliefs in you that helping others is the way to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think my wife and I, we have great role models in our parents and how they, were donated their time and financially, you know, all the way growing up, and for people in our area that needed help. And then on top of that, you come here as a rookie and you see a lot of different guys giving back and having foundations and really making a huge impact and still are making a huge impact in this community. So. Definitely got to see that, which was really cool. And then, my wife and I's faith, just knowing that, God, kind of put us here, for a reason to give back and to, share his love and to, financially he's given us, a lot to be able to give to others, not to just hold to ourselves and to, and sit in a bank account. So, for us, we just feel very blessed and we feel like because of that blessing that we need to do our part now and give to others as well.
On the football side, as a team leader, how do you ensure that the team morale stays high in the locker room?
Well, you lead by example. You go out there and you bust your tail every single day. You don't walk around the building with your head down. You walk around with a smile on your face and you hold yourself accountable. I mean, you, at the end of the day, it's easy to point fingers, but you got to look yourself in the mirror. I said this earlier this week. You got to look yourself in the mirror. You got to figure out how you could be a better leader, a better player on the field, and how you can perform better. So, that's kind of my mindset going into this week. And again, when you come off of a loss or a couple tough losses, the only thing you want to do is get back out on that field and go play football again.
Is it weird that you're now one of the oldest players in the locker room? You guys have the second youngest roster in the NFC. So many young guys. I mean, you're not an old man, but compared to your teammates, you're one of the older guys in that locker room.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely different. And it's something that I need to probably do a better job of using my experience, using my, the things I've seen over the years, whether it be how we started or how we finished or, just different things to be able to give insight to these young guys of that haven't really been through it. In college, they probably had a lot of success as a team and individually and probably hadn't been through, some tough times. But when you're in the NFL, you have these. I mean, it's going to happen. And so to be able to use that and just to share kind of some different experiences and it's definitely different. So I got to be better at that.
Confident that you guys will regain your mojo Sunday. I mean, I know we're talking here Thursday morning, so there's still a couple of days of prep to go, but confident that we'll see a different Vikings team and offense on Sunday.
I would hope so. I mean, I think that's what we're looking for. We don't go out there on Sunday to just go through the motions and show up again on Monday and be disappointed and go through a whole another week like that. We're excited for the opportunity to go prove that that's not us. And that's really all it is. You get 16 opportunities each year to show who you are as an individual, who you are as a team. And how you respond to tough times is a really good implication of how good of leaders do you have on your team. What kind of guys do you have on your team? Do you have men that kind of suck up and they go to work every single day and they do what it takes to get better? Or are you going to have a bunch of guys that sulk and want people to feel bad for them? So that's kind of what we're figuring out right now. Luckily we have a lot of great guys on this team and just a lot of guys that want to fight and scratch and do whatever it takes to help this team be successful.
Last one, I was in the gym with Ryan and Rashad Bateman recently before Rashad decided to rejoin the Gophers, but he gushed about being able to spend some time with you, even going back multiple months, just being able to interact with you. How special of a young man, a player is Rashad? How excited should Gophers fans be at the prospect of him hopefully being able to rejoin the Gophers?
Well, he's there's a few things. Number one, he's a tremendous football player. I got to see him kind of work, in right there and firsthand and see the way that he can run routes and catch the football. And, he's a total package. And then the other side of that, he's a great guy. He's a fun guy to be around, very soft-spoken and just wants to be great. He wants to soak up knowledge and he wants to soak up, ask questions and talk about certain things. He watches a ton of film of NFL receivers. So it's just been really fun to get to know him and to be around him and wishing him nothing but the best.
And is it cool? I mean, that particular day, like Alex Stalock was in your gym. Jake Gensel was in your gym. I mean, kind of the sports fraternity here in town. I mean, it doesn't matter what sport you guys play, but the pro sports fraternity, it seems like a lot of you guys have a close bond.
Yeah, we really enjoy that part, you know, to be able to meet these guys from other sports, other leagues, you know, guys from here, maybe not from here, maybe play here, things like that. It's really fun to get to know them, you know, really understand what makes them good, you know, and how do they do things, and you might be able to use those things for your sport. So it's been really fun to be around those guys and to watch them play as well. When you're around those guys and you see them work, and then you get to cheer for them when they're in their sport. So it's really fun and it's been really cool to get to know those guys.
Adam, thank you. Thank you to you and your wife for doing all that you do in terms of giving back.
I appreciate it.
Mike Hughes and Cam Dantzler missing practice time yet again on Thursday. No Anthony Barr, no Danielle Hunter. How are the Titans only a 2.5-point favorite? The last I checked, I guess I haven't checked all day today, but the last I heard was the Titans are a 2.5-point favorite on Sunday. That line is baffling. Not to suggest that the Vikings can't win the game, but just in terms of trying to get even money on both sides and collecting the juice. I'm baffled how that line is set, but hey, those guys are great at what they do, those who set those lines. But that's a head scratcher to me, much like opening week when the Vikings were favored over Green Bay. I brought that up on this podcast in a question to Mike Lombardi. I'm just baffled. I just don't get it. How is Tennessee only a 2.5-point favorite? More like 5-6? Like, to me, it should be almost double what it is. All right, we are done. Scoop Podcast episode 315 is in the books. Stay sane, stay safe.